You're quite concerned with how you're gonna come across.
Not really, no. Am I?
Welcome, everyone, to The Sweet Smell of Succession, a recap podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen. I host podcasts like The Filmcast and Culturally Relevant. Joining me, as always, she is the host of podcasts such as Extra Hot Great, Listen to Sassy, and Again With This, Tara Ariano. Good day, Tara. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good and excited to dive into this week's episode. So much happened.
Yeah.
In season three, episode three, The Disruption, mm-hmm. which is the episode that we're going to be recapping today. So every week on this podcast, we recap the latest episode of Succession. This week, season three, episode three. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. And Tara, I have been wondering for the longest time, you know, if and how this show is going to shake up the status quo, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like they're starting to do it. They're starting to do it this episode. But let's talk about overall thoughts on this episode before we dive into the detailed recap. What did you think of season three, episode three, The Disruption?
I really felt like the season has started finally. I kind of felt like the first two episodes, I mean, I already said last time that I felt like the first two episodes could have been one episode with just some judicious cuts. And I understand why they had to ease us all back into the world of the show after almost two full years since the last time we saw it. But I feel like now we're like in the world of it more so than we were in like the many small rooms of the first two episodes of season three.
Completely agree with that. And, you know, the thing that also comes to mind is, honestly, I'm going to make a Breaking Bad reference, right? I assume you're familiar with the show. We're going to spoil Breaking Bad. So if you haven't seen Breaking Bad, I'm going to spoil it. But I felt like Breaking Bad for four and a half seasons or four to four and a half seasons, depending on how you define, you know, how many seasons there were total, was a show about failure, you know, a show about like Walter White trying to accomplish something, to build an empire, and failing and making like very basic mistakes and fucking up and so on. And at some point, I think that Vince Gilligan, the creator of that show, and the other showrunners felt like they had exhausted, or the other writers, I should say, he was the showrunner, felt like they had exhausted what they could explore with that dynamic. And they basically made Walter White successful, right? Towards the end of the show. It's like, what would happen if he actually became the man, like became in charge, was successful, sold his meth, made millions of dollars. Like what would actually happen? And this is not that big of a change. This episode, The Disruption, is not that big of a change in the dynamic of the show, but it did remind me a little bit of like, oh, like we've already seen this dynamic of Shiv wanting to have a position in the company and like not getting it. And like, if we want to tell more interesting, different stories with different dynamics between the characters, we need to actually advance our plot a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there was some doubt, I think, in your recap, you were like, is she going to fall for this again from last week's episode? And
right.
It's like, but this episode seems to take place like weeks after, you know, at least a week after the last episode, like some significant time has passed where she is already in the president position. Right. And so I salute the show for actually like advancing it and being like, hey, we've already, my sense is like, they were like, we've already explored what we can with Shiv and the company in their position from last season. Let's try to do something different.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that.
But the other thing is that it's like what Kendall said as she was walking out the door in episode two, where it's like, it's only because you're a girl, you count twice now. Like, and we definitely get more of this in this episode where it's like, Logan is seeing the value of putting his one female child front and center right now because of the scandal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying like it's not a poison chalice or anything.
No, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, I just think it's like, it's nice that the show is kind of altering some dynamics. And also, this episode was really eventful. It's probably like one of the most eventful Succession episodes ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that as well. So a lot happens this episode. And I'm very fortunate that we have Tara Ariano here to help us break it down. So Tara, what is going on in season three, episode three, The Disruption?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be lots that I leave out, but I tried to cover everything. So let's start with everyone is back at work.
Woo!
In as much as they were ever working, which, you know, question mark. Logan has two ideas for how to beat back the scandal. One is stonewalling the Justice Department, literally telling his representatives who are trying to serve him with papers to fuck off, and trotting out his non-Kendall children to say that he is great in public. And we put a face to the voice that we heard in the season premiere, Michelle Ann Vanderhoven, the White House operative that we heard on the phone with Jerry. She's played by Linda Emmond of Lodge 49. And after she comes by Mark Ravenhead's show, Logan tries to see if he can get any further with her in person than in that phone call, which was not very promising. And she's smart enough not to promise anything this time either, except to say that if ATN turns down the temperature in its coverage of the president may see what he can do on Logan's behalf. And Mark Ravenhead, if that name sounds familiar to you, he's the guy in Safe Room in season two that Tom had to bring into his office and say, but you're not really a Nazi, right? Even though you went to Hitler's, you know, whatever that place was, the Ravens, what is it? The Eagle's Nest on his honeymoon. And
also,
then,
same name as Hitler's dog, although different spelling.
Right.
And big fan of Mein Kampf as well.
Yes, he's so read it a few times.
All just coincidences, Tara. All just
exactly.
Coincidences.
So my impression was that he got fired after that episode because
yes.
Rhea is, that was the episode where she came into Waystar in secret and she was like, if anything is going to proceed, he's got to get fired. So I just assumed they preemptively did before.
Same. But maybe after the whole deal fell apart, he's like, you know what? Let's get that guy back here.
Sure, I guess. Possible. But the other thing is that we find out in this episode, which I don't think we knew before, his show is called The Bunker.
Again, like, I'm sure it's just a total coincidence. You know?
Yeah. That's quite a choice.
But that's amazing. That's amazing that that's like such a small detail of a show. You know, they barely even mention it, but
yeah.
if you're paying attention, it's delightful. And by delightful, you know, I don't think Hitler is delightful or anything. I just think it's like they're clearly making like adding to the coincidences that this guy's clearly a white nationalist. You know?
At least a white nationalist, if not a literal Nazi.
Yes.
But I also love when Logan and Michelle Ann go and chat. They go into this little, like, you know, little used conference room on the same floor as wherever the studio is, and they're clearly on the pleb floor, I thought, where people just leave the charger cords all in a mess on the table after they're done because it looks shitty.
Yeah, I mean, my reaction was I actually think this is quite authentic. You mm-hmm. know, I have had a chance in my lifetime to be in rooms where there have been, you know, powerful people at these corporations making decisions, and they often look this shitty. You know, like it's not like there's like necessarily like a special room because the extremely powerful executive is there. Maybe
right.
in some instances, but largely it's like a lot of these rooms are built for utility, and I do like that it captures that. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, but I just feel like on the executive floor, which is where most of the action happens, whenever we're in Waystar, I just assume all of these people's assistants like bustle in and out and tidy everything up before they actually go in for their meetings because their offices always look very nice.
Yes, indeed.
And we also find out in this conversation, Michelle Ann says that Logan and the president have been photographed together at CPAC. So if we didn't explicitly know before, and I'm not sure that we did, then the president must be a Republican. Just a data point that I remembered.
Really? You don't think Biden's going to head to CPAC next year?
Well, he didn't this year. I know that.
I think you're right about that. So
in terms of the media, which is ever more important.
Actually, let me pause there for a second. Like, I think what's interesting in some of these shows is I feel like shows like Veep and this one try to withhold that like information about the president as long as possible until they basically have to reveal it. And I actually think that's a really good move because I don't think you want the president to be like a big character in your show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you want and Veep like handled it really well, I thought, because eventually they're like, okay, because they're going to get into elections and re-elections, like we have to disclose whether she's like, you know, Democrat or Republican, otherwise the plot line falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of true in this show as well, because now that they're at the point where like DOJ is making moves, like you kind of need to know to some degree what the dynamic is between these characters. So yeah. Anyway.
True, but I also think prior to this point, it hasn't mattered what party the president was because, like, Logan can control whoever it is because he's rich.
Fair enough.
Or at least has sway.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. So in terms of the media, which is ever more important because Kendall is apparently deep-throating every microphone that gets within a foot of him. We'll come back to him. Hugo and Carolina want to set up Shiv and Roman with some business reporters officially to talk about the upcoming shareholders meeting, but then those reporters will just happen to get around to talking up Logan as a loving family man and other such lies. And Shiv refuses to be Logan's media surrogate, so Roman sucks it up and does it, and Logan is very grateful. LOL, JK, clip two.
I saw your little interview.
Oh, right, yeah, we don't have to dissect
Ooh,
that.
Oh, well, my daddy. I never figured you for a faggot.
No. Wow.
I'm kidding.
I know. Yeah.
So what's this fishing thing? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, that was Connor, actually. Connor took me on that. But, you know, single, multi-use, happy childhood memory, so... Yeah.
Burr.
Yeah, I really brutal. Like whenever we get a little bit of insight into the relationship, you know, like when you hear Logan interact with his kids, and it just, it's a really good reminder of how challenging and lonely that relationship is. So
yeah. Even when he's like doing him a favor, kind of under duress.
Yes.
Logan still can't help mocking him because that's how their relationship is. That's how family dynamics work in this family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also makes sense for Roman to do this interview, however fake it is, both in its genesis and in Roman's answers, since he is the one who both says he loves Logan most frequently and actually seems like he means it, regardless of whether his idea of love is fucked up or not.
I would agree that he seems to be the one that is most in thrall of his father, for sure.
Yeah, like in the earlier episodes of the season where he said, you know, if they went against Logan, it might actually kill him. And it seems like he's the only one that cares if that happens.
I agree. Although Connor also says like he doesn't want to betray Dad as well. But I agree. I agree that Roman probably is the closest one. So,
yeah. So Shiv seems to me like she's more hesitant to go on the record with a vigorous defense of Logan because he still hasn't told her what happened. And when she asks him to go into detail, his answers are not great. This is kind of a long clip, but I think it's important. Clip three.
We're a big company, but how bad is what is the worst thing?
Not
to
all
be in
that
those papers?
Bad. I mean, health, safety, compliance, a few bad apples. What?
Well, I know that isn't true. Come on, Dad. Tom worked in cruises. Bill told him everything. And besides, I know that there were black ops, and I know that there was targeted intimidation of victims and whistleblowers. The NRPI, for fuck's sake.
Maybe there were some salty moves.
You can't just change your story.
I want to keep you clean. I put Jerry in, but I can't trust her. She's optics. I need you. Listen. I didn't know about any of this shit.
Well, you're on emails.
Do you know how many emails I get a day? I don't read my emails. I get the action points.
I know.
Shiv, the world is fucking rough. We ran a cruise line out of some tin pot ports registered in bongo fucking bongo hovels, and we poured millions in it. Sure, did we play rough with the odd fucking union boss or some moaning mini repeat litigant? I don't know. It was a quarter of a century ago. A lot of it. So, yes, I fought for you and your brothers. But you will not find a piece of paper that makes you ashamed of me. Okay?
Ooh, that qualifier really speaks volumes. Like, you won't find it is not the same as it does not exist. So.
I read it as, like, you won't find a sheet of paper because you know, I did things to insulate myself from the paper trail, but
right?
He was still potentially involved. So.
Yes, for sure. So we talked about this in episode two. It was clear to me then that Shiv knew siding with Kendall was the right thing to do, not just ethically, again, LOL, but politically, because if the little that they definitely know about the scandal is quite bad, then whatever is still successfully being covered up is even worse, and she doesn't want to be the face of it. But Kendall didn't seem more solid than Logan and still kind of doesn't. So here's where she is.
Yeah. And I think this scene reminded me of the scene in season two when Rhea and Logan have their goodbye. Like it's the episode where they go to testify, you know, in front of the Congress.
Yeah, DC is the title of the episode.
Right. And, you know, Rhea like asks him about stuff and Logan just casually lies and Rhea is like very upset by that. And
yeah,
this felt like what that this, you know, what a version of that scene would play like if it was between Logan and his daughter, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
But the reason that I wanted that clip to, and even though it was so long, is that it feels like every word is so purposeful, even on his side, even when he's trying to be casual.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. Like he is assuming he's being recorded, basically.
Right,
and,
right.
And he is speaking accordingly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't read his email, you know?
Yes.
Every person I've ever known who's been that powerful, like, they don't read their email. If they do it, they have their assistant print it out because they don't know how to work their computers, you know? So I buy it. But at the same time, this is still, and I think she also knows this, like, he's acting like it's old times where you could get away with this shit if you just threw enough money at it. And she knows it's not the same, you know?
Yeah.
She knows it's a different world now.
You know, there's also a lot of, in speaking of Breaking Bad, in last episode and this episode, there is a lot of I'm doing this for my family dynamic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Between Kendall saying, like, in the season premiere, like, I did it for you guys, you know, to Rava. And then this episode, you know, where Logan Roy is saying that he basically did it for his kids, you know, it's all ultimately very self-serving. And I think we're kind of witnessing that in this conversation. So.
Yeah, especially when we actually see him interact with his children. He's like calling them slurs for yeah. saying they love him. You know, like it just doesn't ring true, especially from him, because we haven't seen him be loving in a traditional way that we may, you know, experience love or express love with our own loved ones as normal people who are not fucked up.
Fair enough. So,
also noteworthy, right before this conversation, we see Marsha and Celeste in the living room at Logan's apartment, still working out the details of Marsha's return, which, get that paper, Marsha. Make it worth your while.
Indeed. I think she's going to make some bank off this one. So feeling good about that.
I mean, as good as one can, but yes. Unlike the Roys, being photographed or filmed for a potential audience of millions is not something I have to consider in my day-to-day life, but I do understand the value of a great smile, and a crucial component of my dental hygiene is my beloved blue Quip toothbrush. And it's not just me. The Quip electric toothbrush is loved by over 7 million mouths and has timed sonic vibrations with 30-second pulses to guide a dentist-recommended 2-minute clean, a lightweight and sleek design for adults and kids with no wires or bulky charger to weigh you down, a multi-use travel cover that doubles as a mirror mount for less clutter, and reusable handles in a range of sleek metal hues, including best-selling all black and all pink, as well as bright plastic colors sure to add a pop to your bathroom counter. On top of your brushing, you can upgrade your Quip with a new Smart Motor 2, track and improve your brushing with the free Quip app, earn amazing rewards like free refills, products, Target gift cards, and more. Beyond the brush, Quip has everything you need to build a complete routine, including anti-cavity toothpaste in mint or watermelon that helps prevent cavities, refillable gum that's sugar-free, has long-lasting mint flavor, and comes with a dispenser. In addition to brush heads, Quip also delivers fresh floss, toothpaste, mouthwash, and gum refills every 3 months from $5. Shipping is free, so you can save money and skip the hustle and bustle of in-store shopping. With stylish and affordable electric brushes starting at just $25, you won't be paying through the teeth for better oral health. If you go to getquip.com/succession right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/succession. GETQUIP.com/succession. Quip, the good habits company. Meanwhile, Tom, not having a great time. He has decided to use Waystar's lawyer, but he is also seeking outside advice from a friend. And this friend indicates he is almost certainly going to have to do some time. But Tom has had a thought about that, and he discusses it with Shiv in clip 4.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, maybe it would be good to get out in front of it. If prison is likely, could I find any benefit in that, you know?
You mean cooperate?
No, not with DOJ. Your dad. I go to your dad and I offer myself up as the beating post.
No, honey. You can't. No. Honey, you're drunk. But it is smart. Yeah, it's a kind of a win from a no-win.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, it's punchy. I mean, you know, it's very likely that no one goes to prison.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And either way, you bank gold with my dad. The offer is kind of genius.
All being well, you know, with a fair wind, I could be done in less than a year.
Mm. But no, you can't, Tom. Jesus, everyone's doing fucking somersaults for him right now.
So you really admired Shiv for keeping Tom from being the blood sacrifice in the season two finale. So I was very curious to know your thoughts about this exchange.
I don't think this exchange really contradicts that, though. You know, I think that she's doing some game theory and it's like, you know what? Now that things have come out in the way they have, she's like, I don't think he's likely to go to jail. So he might as well offer himself up as a blood sacrifice and earn some credit with the Pops. So, you know, back then it was unclear what the outcome would be. And I guess she has potentially more information now. So I feel okay with it. What was your reaction, though?
I mean, this is right after her conversation with Logan, where she says Tom was in Cruises. He knows what happened. So
you're saying, like, you're interpreting it as kind of like she's throwing him to the wolves, right?
I don't think she's necessarily throwing him to the wolves. Like, I understand the game theory aspect of it, but I also think, like, if she thinks there's any non-zero chance that prison is possible, that he shouldn't throw himself on Logan's mercy.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, this is going to get really interesting when we get to winners and losers this week then, Dara.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway.
So Tom does make this offer to Logan. It does play out exactly the way Shiv predicted. Logan sort of, you know, it first is like, what do you want for this? Tom says nothing. And so he's sort of impressed, but he also says it won't come to that. He thinks, Logan thinks. But it also seems to make Tom realize that being in Logan's good books should not be his most important consideration right now. So he goes straight from that conversation to making an appointment with a lawyer that his off-screen friend recommended. So, like, to me, that means he's not with Shiv either.
I think it's a fair point. I think fair point.
So on top of all this, Tom also has to try to appease ATN advertisers who are fleeing the network in droves. And the slideshow that I assume Hugo has assembled behind Tom of smiling female Waystar employees and their extracted at gunpoint testimonials, which we only see a little bit of, but they're just like, all I can speak to is my own experience and it's been very positive. It's very funny. It's like another one of those details like the bunker where it's like, it's not lampshaded, but right. If you notice it in the background, it's very good. And then Kendall causes Greg to have to buy a $40,000 watch that may or may not work. Now, I get that this is partly to remind us that Kendall doesn't know what regular people's lives are like, and that when he told Greg he would hook him up with this very nice watch to thank him for his part in Kendall's revolution, he just meant introduce him to his watch guy, not that Kendall was going to buy it for Greg. And it also reminds us Kendall is a selfish, rich asshole who wouldn't notice if $40,000 fell out of his bank account. But I think we got it. Like, this is what I mean when I say I think they're turning Greg into Ralph Wiggum. Like, this whole watch thing, it's dumb. It's not that funny. You don't have to buy a watch just because you tried it on. It's not underwear. Like, I don't know if we're supposed to think the watch guy is a desperate junkie that Kendall knows who, like, found this watch and is counting on Greg not to fight him about it. But, like, Greg has access to $40,000 to spend on jewelry. The watch doesn't work. I just hated everything about the storyline.
Wow.
What did you think?
Damn. I would agree with you that it's like hitting the same note that we've already seen before. And it was unclear to me, like, what the purpose of the plot. Like,
yeah.
Maybe it will come into play later. Maybe there's going to be some plot around the watch, and the fact that it's $40,000 is going to drive Greg to do something, you know?
Right.
Potentially.
Maybe.
But And maybe at that point, this plotline will be redeemed for you. But if is the end of it, then I would agree. It's just kind of a weird thing to add. I guess it's just kind of like, here's some comic relief a little bit with Greg fumbling with the thing.
Again,
I feel like Greg's character has stayed relatively the same. Relatively one note, but it's a note that I enjoy. And I really thought it was hilarious, him kind of, you know, getting himself into the situation. And, you know, Tara, probably he just put that thing on a credit card. That was my assumption, you know?
But Greg has a credit card with that high a limit?
Yeah, he has a successful job at Waystar Royco, where he deals with a lot of target-based incentives.
Mm-hmm.
And so target-oriented actions, you know, is my understanding. So I think it's entirely possible he could have put it all in credit or something like that. So it did not bother me nearly as much as you. I thought it was just fine and a little bit like, what was the point of that? But not nearly as bad as you thought it was.
I guess, but to get back to the credit card, in the premiere, we had that whole thing with his mom.
Yes.
And she was buying all the Nutribullets, which made me think he is budget conscious.
It's true. But I think we're seeing that he can be easily peer pressured into things. So.
Fair enough. My thing about Greg is, like, he actually is at the center of this story, of the Kendall story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that in order for him to have things to do in an episode, that he needs to be doing this dopey stuff. Like, he is actually important to this.
It's true.
I wish we were seeing more of that.
I can agree with that for sure.
Anyway, the main event of the episode is Shiv versus Kendall / Kendall versus Dignity. And everyone is scared that Kendall's going to try and come into the office and make a big scene. And Shiv knows she's going to see Kendall at a journalism charity event and offers to try to talk some sense into him. But Kendall is so in love with his new position as a media darling that this is, quite simply, never going to work. Here's what it sounds like in the limo on the way to the event, where Kendall makes everyone play a game he invented about himself. Clip 5.
Started. Okay.
Already.
And... Ooh. Good tweet.
Okay, allies don't always come in the form we like, but what Kendall Roy did was important and brave.
Boom. Boom. That's the shit ball. All right. Bad tweet.
I got it.
Bad
Kendall
tweet.
Roy is
bad
not a
tweet.
Hero, fam. He's bootleg Ross with a daddy complex.
Love it.
Okay. Good tweet.
Okay, keep him coming, motherfuckers.
It's just because he's murking his shitty dad, but I kind of want to fuck Kendall Roy.
Oh, booyah.
Watch out. Bad tweet. Okay, he clearly has mental health issues and crazy guilt coupled with addiction. That's all this is, and it's sad.
Oh, bootleg
Ross. I don't
know if
he invented that game, Tara. I mean, I play good tweet, bad tweet about myself all the time with my friends. So.
Well, I've never been invited to play with you, so I didn't know that.
All right. Well, noted. Noted.
I bootleg Ross is very good. The gusto with which Jeremy Strong plays these cringe moments is astonishing. Like, hats off for his completely vanity-free performance of this role.
I agree. And it's so painful because this is one of those things where, very much like the dinner in Turnhaven and other extremely painful parts of the show, you see it come. You see the end coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
The audience is ahead of the scene, and it creates this delightful, cringe, excruciating experience. So,
for sure. So Barry Schneider's associate, who was with her in the premiere, her name is Comfrey. I'm guessing at the pronunciation. No one says her name. I've just saw it in the credits. Comfry.
Mm-hmm.
She's played by Dasha Nekrasova. She has the most thankless job in the universe, trying to keep Kendall from showing his ass in public.
Indeed. Agreed.
So Kendall has become a frequent topic on The Disruption, also our episode title. But in universe, it is a late night show hosted by Sophie Iwobi, who's played by Z-Way, the Showtime host. And Kendall is so into attention, good or bad, that he stops down an after party at his place after this gala to make everyone watch Sophie's latest segment on him. Clip 6.
So let's turn for a moment to Kendall Roy. Woo-hoo. My favorite white man, Snitchy Rich, or as you may know him, a jar of mayonnaise in a Prada suit.
Okay.
Roy tweeted earlier today, we must overthrow the culture of corruption that silences women. The fuck is he talking
Amen.
About? That's like your dog saying, hey, guys, 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 we have to punish whoever ate coffee grounds out of the trash and then shit on the sofa. Hashtag sofa justice. Actual
That's
progressives
great.
Have been embracing this dude. Why? This is the guy who told Congress like a month ago that the investigation into his father was a witch hunt. And he's also the fail bro who once posed in this photo flashing gang signs outside of Jean George.
Okay, that is such a reach. You were being tongue-in-cheek.
She fucking loves me.
Kendall
she Roy loves
suffers
me.
From a severe case.
This is love.
What doctors call Caucasian rich Brit. What happens is genetically inherited wealth and whiteness can cause neural pathways in the brain to constrict and make the patient believe he's woke when he's just a total fucking jackass.
So the way he simply cannot see that at least half the guests at this party are embarrassed for him, like even Naomi, his biggest cheerleader, looks like she's waiting for him to figure out this isn't like getting roasted at a Don Rickles show. It's actually brutal and he probably should not be watching it.
Yeah. I think this whole Kendall subplot in this episode is really fascinating because there is a phenomenon online of, let's just say, conservative. I was going to use a terrible word, but let's just say conservative politicians who seem to welcome being dunked on, right? Mm-hmm. I'm specifically thinking of Ted Cruz, who has tangled a lot with Seth Rogen online and Craig Mazin, and he said a lot of extremely stupid things and then gotten completely owned for it online. And I've always wondered, what is the psychology of someone who does that? Like, you know, when you make that tweet, you're going to get 5,000 tweets dunking on you. Like, you're going to get 5,000 people saying you're stupid and in extremely creative ways, too. You'll be a laughingstock. And he's got to know at this point. Like, it's not like this is, this like only happened once ever. It's happened many times at this point. But he still gets out there. He still suits up, talking about Ted Cruz, and still tweets through it.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, like, what is the motivation for someone like that? I think these people, you know, on a very extreme level, I would surmise that maybe they kind of get off on it in some way. They kind of have some kind of sick enjoyment of it. But more likely, I think that they just desperately want to be a part of the conversation in some way.
Yeah.
And are willing to be made fun of in order to have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been like, why would someone be led into this? And I don't know that Kendall Roy is Ted Cruz, you know, but I feel like this is a version of it where, like, he's convinced himself that he is actually being loved here.
Yeah.
He's not.
Right. I mean, in Ted Cruz's case, we're getting slightly off track. I think it's partly that if he thinks he's found common ground with someone, then great, then he's cool. And if he, you know, ends up getting roasted by one of these people, he can just be like to his supporters, look at these Hollywood sickos coming at me.
Right.
Like there's no downside for him to do this.
He thinks he's netting out in a positive place. Right?
Yes.
For that. Yeah.
One way or another, it'll work out for him. And it's crazy to me to remember that Ted Cruz is like my age. Because he seems like he's 100. I mean, I'm a lot older than you, but he functionally is no different on the internet than like Chuck Grassley. I should be careful. He's my senator. But Kendall, part of being in the conversation is Kendall's goal right now, it seems like.
Indeed.
She wants to, Comfrey wants them to talk to Barry about ways to deal with the backlash. That's not how he sees it at all. And he apparently can't stop watching the segment and decides the next day when he's watching it over again that he is going to go into the office after all. He calls Greg first and tells him not to tell anyone, probably assuming Greg definitely will tell someone, which Greg does. He warns Tom. So there's a whole stage managed thing where it's like Kendall, you know, makes a point of deliberately trying to get stopped in the lobby because his body man is taping him. He's such a brat.
It's painful, you know, it's very much of the kind of YouTube TikTok generation of, hey, film me doing this extremely like uncomfortable, violative thing.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of sad when it's coming off of someone like Kendall in his position and his age.
Right.
You know?
Well, and also like if, you know, when Carolina and Hugo come down, it is possible that if Kendall posts this, it will look bad for Waystar, even though he's the one that's instigating this whole situation, like just for that purpose.
Right. Indeed.
That there's also a whole conversation about the temperature in his office when he makes his way up there. The most he thinks it is too cold is 6 degrees. It may be as little as 3. Not 6 degrees Celsius, which is a lot. He means Fahrenheit. Ridiculous.
Yeah, he's like it's at least like 64 or something like that, right?
Yes.
Something along those lines. So yeah, pretty hilarious stuff. Classic Succession. So.
Yeah. So while Kendall is in his office feeling himself, which is all he can do because he's also locked out of the computer system, Colin, Logan's body man, comes in and he just kind of glares at him a little bit. And Kendall's like, what? And Colin leans way in on onto him and says, I know you. And Kendall looks rattled as hell. Like,
loved it. Loved it.
Yes.
Because, Colin's the one who helped Kendall cover up the murder. Or not manslaughter, I would argue, right? And he's just like, hey, you've got... there's a reason why you didn't do this before, you know? Which is that you were involved in this terrible cover-up of this tragic death. And maybe think about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. Of course, it did nothing to dissuade him, but...
Yeah. It put him back on his heels a little bit in the moment, but it didn't make him leave. So, but yes, I just wanted to note that because they keep dropping in references to that crime that Kendall has so far gotten away with. But who knows for how long. So then Shiv's big debut as Waystar's new domestic president is at a town hall for employees, both in the building and live streamed to satellite offices. And it's going to be a very bland affair after Shiv and Roman have rejected most of the questions that staffers submitted anonymously through the intranet. But as soon as she starts talking very seriously about the allegations and cruises, the song Rape Me by Nirvana starts blasting from what seems to be multiple Bluetooth speakers strategically placed around the area. And she gives up trying to compete with them. And that's when she goes to Kendall's office, which where he is no longer. But he has left all the boxes from the speakers that he had his guy Remy buy. And Shiv, in the moment we all remember from the trailer, she hawks a loogie in his planner. Shitty but effective.
It's a couple thoughts of this sequence. First of all, I don't think I've seen someone spit in someone's planner before on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's happened, but I do think it's kind of like a very visual, an effective visual, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously Sarah Snook is an amazing actress, and I really enjoy her work in this show, but yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and seeing it in context out of the trailer, we actually do definitely see her like hork it up. Like she goes for it. I know this because I made a gif. So,
but also she seems like genuinely hurt by what has occurred, right? She seems like almost
she's crying. She's
on the verge
crying.
Of tears. Yeah, exactly. A couple of thoughts also about this town hall prep. I think that I do think that like they probably would have been able to disable those speakers in a real life town hall, but let's give them that. Like that, you know, maybe people didn't want to unplug it or didn't know to unplug it. The prep for the town hall felt to me not realistic in terms of how a town hall would actually be prepped, but realistic in terms of what the id of leadership would be going into a town hall.
Yeah.
Right. So I think actually, like, I've been to town halls at multiple companies, and they typically do like address some challenging questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not quite like this, but I feel like the way that Shiv and Roman talked in the scene is like how they wish they could treat these questions, you know?
Yes.
Because these are extremely successful, powerful, rich people. And it's like they're dealing with questions that are from people that do not have their visibility into the company. And I can imagine they might be at times, on occasion, annoyed by it. I have no idea. I don't have actually information, but I just can imagine, hey, this might be annoying sometimes. And Shiv and Roman did a great job of vocalizing that. So,
yeah. Well, it's on two levels, right? There's the level of like, I can't believe we have to deal with this shit. We're so important. And who are these idiots? If they all think this way, why do they even work here?
Yes. Your words, not mine, but yep.
Right. but then there's also the aspect of like, if our dad hears these questions, he will lose his mind, which is like, that's also real. Mm-hmm. I think that's real for sure.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So, really, really sad. It's like, I think also that something like this would probably go down in legend in company history. You know,
oh,
like,
God.
If something like this happened at a company, like, they'd be talking about it for years, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, if and how they're going to like shrug it off. My guess is they're just going to move on, you know, like it's not going to come back to haunt her in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But something like this is like immensely damaging. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's so effective because it's so shitty. This is like her big, this is her unveiling in the company.
Brutal.
And he's spoiled it. Like she's never going to have to interact with people from this point forward who are going to like, you know, hum rape me under their breath from now on, probably. But everyone's going to remember it. And anytime she's in an elevator with someone, she's going to know you were there that day because everyone was there that day.
Yeah. It's brutal. You feel so bad for her. You know, I felt very bad for her. So.
Well, yeah, but she didn't have to choose the side. And she knew it was wrong when she did it, but she did it anyway.
You are just merciless, Tara.
I'm just saying, it's the truth. Like we saw her face in the last episode that she wanted to go with Kendall and she didn't.
Mm.
You know,
fair enough.
Is this a proportional response from him? No, but you know, I'm not going to say she doesn't deserve it. That's all. Anyway, the cringe is not over. Kendall is so excited to go to the disruption, which he has evidently volunteered to do, to be interviewed. And he's gotten his comedy writer to prepare some material for him, but he's also working on his own stuff, which we hear a tiny bit of it where he's like, what if I said my dad hired a law firm called Cover Ups R Us, which like, oh God, don't. But he also wants to try and kiss up to the writers to show that he's down. All it shows us is that he has zero sense of self, and the show's writers, I mean, the disruption writers, are very embarrassed for him after he has wandered away. This is not the only moment in the episode where he shows that he's down, by the way. We also see him when he, you know, makes his entry at Waystar. He, like, goes through the freight elevator, and he's, like, gives a fist bump to some guy that's doing manual labor down there. It's like, stop. You are not a man of the people. You are trash. But anyway.
Yeah, it felt, honestly, like such a violation, what he does in this episode. You know, I have not spent too much time on the sets of these kinds of shows, but it feels to me like having the guest come in unannounced to, like, where the writers are hanging would be, like, very frowned upon, is my guess.
Yes.
And to basically kind of try to interfere slash sway the effect of the show or the results of the show, the outcome of the show, there would be a very stern talking to that production assistant is my guess after this.
Yes, perhaps. Although I hope there would be some sensitivity to the fact that like he was going to do it regardless.
he went rogue. And
yes,
like,
unless this PA like physically stopped him from doing it, there was no way anyone could have prevented it.
It's true. It's true.
At the same time, Shiv is trying to get Connor and Roman on board with an open letter that she's written about Kendall and his many problems, his addiction. You know, he's a habitual liar. He was making grandiose statements to them. I guess the rape me incident fully convinced her she can never find common ground with Kendall, and Logan is going to have to be her guy no matter what may come out about Logan in the future. And Roman and Connor think the letter's too much, even if everything she accuses Kendall of is technically true. But she's committed and she sends it out without their signatures. And they are 15 minutes from taping at the disruption when Comfrey shows the letter to Kendall in our last clip.
So what do we do with this? Because this is actually really sort of nothing, I think. Yeah?
No, I wouldn't say it's nothing.
Well, that's below the belt. Is the world seeing this or just basically us?
Yeah, the whole world.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Can we ask them not to use it tonight? Will they mention it?
I think they'll probably mention it.
But it's private, I feel like.
Yeah, but it's not private.
No.
No.
Okay. Can I still go on? I feel like I still go on, right?
So this is partly Kendall's rich asshole entitlement, which we also saw. There's an offhand reference to. He apparently made the show change their taping time to accommodate him, even though, as we know, his days are not that busy right now. But I think Kendall saying that this is private shows the cognitive dissonance that he's experiencing at the idea that Shiv would say this stuff in public. Like, he's not surprised she would say it because they viciously attack each other in person all the time. But this is such an escalation that he, like, actually cannot comprehend what's happening.
Yeah, there's a couple things to point out about this. One is I think that Kendall's or Jeremy Strong's performance as Kendall is really excellent. You really see him kind of reverting to season one Kendall. in this scene, you know?
Yes.
He's all, like, swinging his big dick around, you know, the first three episodes. And then finally, like, this kind of just knocks the wind out of his sails. And there's this kind of stammering and discomfort that is really characteristic of who Kendall was in the first season when he was very unsure of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt that Kendall return, like, come flooding back in this episode.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just a really great moment from a performance standpoint. So,
yes.
And, you know, there's a, do you know Nicholas Winding Refn, the guy who directed Drive, the Ryan mm-hmm. Gosling movie? Yeah. He made this series called the Pusher Trilogy, which is a very rarely seen series of films that I think is amazing. And Mads Mikkelsen stars in the second film. It's called With Blood on My Hands. And I was listening to the commentary, this is like many years ago, and he was saying, like, I really like Mads Mikkelsen, and I wanted him to be humiliated in every single scene that he's in this movie. He's the main character. So literally every scene that Mads Mikkelsen is in, something humiliating is happening to him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt about Kendall in this episode. Like, virtually every scene, something humiliating is happening to him.
Even when he thinks he's on top.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. Very embarrassing.
So Kendall tries to talk, I assume she's an EP, into either leaving the story out of his appearance or letting him try to get Jay-Z there on 15 minutes notice. It does not work. So he just finds an unattended server room and hides in it.
Yeah.
Which is so rough.
It's brutal. And I actually like how this, because it took so long for him to walk into that room in the show, you know?
Yes.
And because I'm like, I don't even know what he's going to do, right? Like,
yeah.
Is he going to go back to the thing? He's going to leave the building? And it takes a while for you to realize, like, where he is.
Yeah.
And I like how the show took its time and let that realization settle in. So,
yeah. Like, I wondered if he realized, like, if I tried to go to an exit door, someone's going to be there and stop me. And that will be even more humiliating.
Indeed. So you got to hide where the servers are. No one wants to go there.
No. So. Right. But even if this woman, the EP, we assume, even if she had said, yes, we won't talk about the letter, they would have just talked about it the next night when you weren't there.
Yeah.
Like, there's no solving this, which maybe is why he
Well, I think what's so great about it is you get the sense he's, like, physically incapable of facing mm-hmm. them. Like, because you probably end up with a better outcome if he went on and, like, tried to address it, right?
Yeah.
But he just physically can't do it. And
well,
that's,
and he mentally can't do it either. Like, yeah. He's not in a headspace to be, like, cocky gang sign throwing Kendall,
yeah.
right?
Agreed.
He's little boy Kendall. And this is, like, I think we've talked about this before, that they do such a great job when they're framing these shots because they have so many unusually tall actors on this show. Like, actors are usually small. They're short and they have big heads. This is how actors look. And so there's a lot of shots where, like, Greg or whoever is just towering over Kendall because Jeremy Strong is not tall. And in this shot, like, when he goes and hides in the room, it just makes him look even more like a little boy.
Indeed.
The physicality that he brings to it. Anyway, let's wrap it up. When the cameras roll, Sophie attacks Kendall for ghosting her, which he watches on his phone. Or no, he watches on a monitor. Sorry, because he's in the server room. The FBI shows up at Waystar, and Logan's top team convince him he has to cooperate. And then we cut back to Kendall, who's still in the server room, but he's watching the raid on his phone and smiles, even though he is still hiding out at a TV show he asked to come on in an attempt to aggrandize himself even further. And as we said up top, this was the first episode of the season where I really felt like I had it back. It was just so meaty, so much to talk about. So much stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
A couple of things I want to bring up, you know, a couple stray observations.
Mm-hmm.
One is that I'm curious if you had an opinion on Ziwei and her performance in the show as Sophie Awobi, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's interesting because her show is on Showtime, right? But this is obviously an HBO show. So I thought that was interesting, kind of like some cross promotion going on there. But I thought it was a fairly good approximation of what that type of show is.
Yeah, this is very, the disruption is very different from Ziwei, which is also what her show is called.
It's more like Full Frontal with Sam
exactly.
B.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, like, pretty good. This is, like, if you're making a fake version of this is, like, looks pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. They definitely got the style right and the graphics and all of that. I thought they were very accurate with that. Agree.
It must take so much work to do something like this.
Yeah. Especially, which you normally only notice when they do it wrong.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. Yeah, but it felt like it fit right in. And they did lean on it a lot. You know, there's that whole scene when they watch it in this episode.
Yeah.
The other thing I just want to highlight about this scene, this episode that I really appreciated is there's this moment between Kendall and Shiv at the journalism dinner where she's like, he says to her like, oh, it's you now. You know, like, you're the old me, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think that there's this interesting statement that I think this show is trying to make about the corporate world, right? That like many people go into it thinking that they can make a difference and be a force for good, and then find that they have become part of the problem. And he, you know, Kendall is post corporate in his ways, and he thinks Shiv is kind of less enlightened than him. And I just thought that was like in a kind of interesting moment. Like, it's very subtle in terms of what it's saying, and you know, who knows how the rest of the season will pay that off or back that up. But I thought it was a really cool moment. Anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's like, trying to find his own way, but his way sucks also. Like, there's just no winning really for these characters.
I agree, to be fair. I don't think he's like has secret of life information that she needs or anything. Yeah.
I didn't think that you thought that.
Yeah.
No, but increasingly, I just feel like I said this last time too, that the story of this show is none of these people is fit to take over for Logan.
Indeed. All right. Well, before we get to winners and losers, let's throw up some plugs. You've been listening to Tara this whole time deliver an excellent recap with witty commentary of this episode. Tara, if people want to listen to more of your stuff, where can they do that?
Well, they can listen to me on other podcasts, which include Again With This, which is about Melrose Place. Listen to Sassy about the very important teen magazine of the late 80s and 90s. And on Extra Hot Great, a general television podcast, which you have guested on.
Indeed. And which is part of my regular rotation. Big fan of Extra Hot Great and all the stuff that Tara does. You can find more of my work at the Filmcast podcast, as well as on Culturally Relevant, where I interview interesting writers, directors, actors, and people from all around the entertainment world. And you should check that out at culturallyrelevantshow.com.
So that is part of my regular rotation as well.
Appreciate it. So those are some plugs. Let's get to winners and losers of the week. Every week, we pick a winner who came out on top in whatever way we choose to define that. From the Roy family, and we pick a winner who came out on top from outside the Roy family, as well as a loser from the Roy family and from outside the Roy family. So let's talk about the winning Roy this week.
For me, the winning Roy is Roman. And someone tweeted at our account at Succession Pod that it seems like Logan is being led by Roman the most, that he follows Roman's advice. He, you know, does what Roman seems to want to steer him towards. And I think the reason that Roman is the winner here, even though Logan called him a very bad name for doing him a favor with this interview, is that he was impressed that he did it despite his mockery. And he also did not seem to be put out at all that Roman didn't sign his name to Shiv's letter, and in fact said that was the smart play. So I think Logan's going to remember that, and that was a good move, both of those from Roman.
I'm going to choose something that is probably going to reveal me to be a moron later, but I'm going to say Tom, because I don't think Tom's going to jail, my guess. And he offered himself as blood sacrifice to Logan, got a lot of credit that way. So I'm going to say Tom's doing okay. But we'll see. Maybe he will go to jail and this will be like the stupidest winning Roy I've ever chosen.
I don't think he's necessarily going to go to jail, but I think all the credit that he got with Logan for making that offer is going to dissipate once they find out he has his own lawyer.
We will see.
We will.
Losing Roy this week. Tara?
Well, he never thought it was going to happen, I don't think, and then it did when the FBI descended on the office. So I'm going to say Logan is our losing Roy this time.
I agree. It's a bad situation for Waystar Royco, and Logan's at, you know, on top of it, and I think he's in a bad spot. So I agree with you. Logan is also my losing Roy of the week. Winning non-Roy of the week. Tara?
Sophia Wobie got so much mileage out of Kendall and only is going to have more now that he showed up at the studio and then fucked off before she could interview him.
Yes. This could be a career making for the fictional character in the show.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe her show's already doing really well, but like this could be a huge bump in ratings for her. So good for her. She should get it. And I agree that this is she's going to be dining out on this for a long time. So good for that character. All right.
Yeah. And if you liked her on this show, watch Seaway. All episodes of the first season are streaming on the Showtime app, Showtime Anytime. I do not get any money for making this plug. I'm just telling you that's where you can find it.
Losing Nonroy.
Oh, Comfrey, Barry's assistant, because I cannot imagine anything worse than what she's trying and failing to do with Kendall right now.
It's pretty tough. I put my losing Nonroy as Jerry because she is CEO of Waystar Royco, and she tried to Cassandra her way into the, you know, Cassandra her way out of the situation, but no one listened to her. And now the company's in a really bad spot. So,
and even before it goes super wrong, like she's telling Carl to do things and then he's going over her head to Logan, who's then
she's just
like
in a really bad
her.
Spot. I feel bad for her. So, I know you don't feel bad for anyone on the show, but
true, I don't.
Those are our winners and losers. Let's get to our quote of the week. We pick a favorite quote from the episode each week. Tara, what's your favorite quote and why?
Early on, we get a conversation between Shiv and Roman where they're discussing Kendall's latest interview, and Roman unkindly misquotes Kendall. Oh, I love my kids. What are their names again? Blurface and who cares?
Incredible. The writing for Roman is so sharp on this show.
It's like, very good.
He is like, I think, the one that has like the sharpest writing out of all the characters. It's amazing. Just so much wit there. I chose a quote from Tom, my favorite character. Quote, I won't wriggle. Just clunk the trout on the head and put it in your pouch, end quote. Which I thought was a very eloquent way of saying, like, I will submit. And it's like, what is it? It's very similar to, like, king of all leafy vegetables, his majesty the spinach. You know, it's like very vivid sort of analogy, metaphor, illustration that also feels like it comes from Mr. Cornfed Lawyer in the show. So love that quote. All right. That's it. Tara, can't believe we got through it all in under an hour. Really nice.
I know.
Very professional execution there, Tara. So that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Sweet Smell of Succession. Thank you so much for listening. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us at successionpod on Twitter. Tara, it's been a blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.